We're starting intro number 2 to the book of Esther. So our introduction now begins with creation, okay? What's the focal point? Where does creation start? Where does the world begin? What is the first part of planet Earth that's created? What is the first part of Earth that's created? The Holy of Holies. Okay, Hashem builds from the top down. Human beings have to build from the bottom up. Hashem builds from the top down. So the holiest place on earth, the Holy of Holies, is created. And from there, Hashem evolves the rest of the world. So we have earth is created. 7 days of creation. Adam is at the Holy of Holies. He brings his first sacrifice. We have 10 generations to Noah, who will bring a sacrifice there. We have 10 generations to Avraham Avinu, who's born in 1948, who will bring a sacrifice and ultimately bind his son Isaac up there on that mountain. We move on. 400 years later, the Jews come out of Egypt, and they are told that they are coming so that they can enter the land of Israel, as it says in Az Yashir, our goal is to come and build a temple. We're headed to the land of Israel, which is the pinnacle, the height of holiness in the land of Israel is that temple, the Kodesh HaKodashim, the connecting point between heaven and earth, where we focus our prayers and where Hashem gives us prophecy through, so we enter the land of Israel. We conquer for 7 years. We divide for 7 years. We have a century and a half, 2 centuries period of judges. And then we have Samuel the prophet who anoints our first king, whose name is Saul, Shaul. After 2 years, we have King David, who is king for 40 years. Passes away at the age of 70, right? That's why Adam lived 930 years. He's supposed to live 1,000 years. He gave 70 years to David. So David HaMelech lives 70 years. 40 years he's king. And then his son Shlomo is sinful. And Hashem decrees that the kingdom would be divided. 10 tribes go to Yerovam ben Nevat. 2 tribes stay with... What's Shlomo's son? Rechavam, the son of Shlomo. So the Jews start sinning. They start serving idols. And Hashem warns them. They don't listen. And ultimately, a few centuries down the road, we have Hoshea ben Elah, the final king of the northern 10 tribes. And the 10 tribes are exiled by the Assyrian Empire, the greatest Holocaust in Jewish history. 10 million Jewish souls gone. Exiled. The Assyrian Emperor comes in. What's the Assyrian Emperor's name? Sancheiriv. One of his soldiers is, as we discussed in the previous intro, Nebuchadnezzar. And we said he was the scribe for the king. And one time he had a day off and he comes back the next day and he sees the copy of a letter that was written to the Jewish king. And the king writes, from me, the Assyrian Empire, to you, in the name of your God, and you the king. So he says, what are you doing here? If you want to honor their God, you don't put your name first, you don't put the king's name first, you put Hashem's name first. What kind of scribe is that? You can't write a letter like that. They tell him it's already been sent. He says, I'm going to stop the messenger. And he takes step 1, 2, 3 steps to stop the messenger. And once he's finished 3 steps in heaven, a voice comes out and says, he honors Hashem's name so much, he will be king over the universe. And he's about to take step 4. And if he would continue pursuing that messenger, who knows what would be with the Jewish people? Because this is at a time where we were taking on pagan gods. So our angel comes and stops him and distracts him and stops him in his tracks. And he says, never mind, okay. So we take 3 steps every day in Shmona Esrei towards Hashem as a way of saying, Hashem, we're also taking 3 steps towards you. We're also trying to honor you. So, yes. No. We take 3 steps into prayer, and at the end of prayer, we take 3 steps out of prayer. The fact that today you stand in front of a table and you cannot take 3 steps forward, so you take 3 steps back in order to take 3 steps forward.
But that's not really meaning anything.
You're supposed to take 3 steps forward, and at the end of prayer, you take 3 steps back. You're approaching prayer with 3 steps forward in the beginning, and you're ending prayer with taking 3 steps back.
So the thing that
correct. Because
totally.
They don't have it, because very often you have a table in front of you. You cannot take 3 steps forward.
I'm saying, like, you see, like, is that specific, like, calculated, like, 1, 2, 3?
Right.
That's completely unnecessary.
But don't go telling people that.
Tell them.
You know, people like to do what they think they should be doing. You know, if that's what everyone does, you could do it too. It's It's okay. But now you understand what you're doing. Taking three steps into prayer, or three steps back. It's the way you approach a king, and at the end of the conversation, you respectfully take three steps, you bow out. The northern 10 tribes have been exiled. And some of them, remnants, come back. We have the southern empire. We discussed how Chizkiyahu has the fantastic miracle that he will... And then he errs, and he shows the Babylonian king, he shows the emissaries of the king, he shows them the most private things he has. And then, we're going to skip many stories here. And here we go. So we move forward, and we have a king named Jehoiakim, 25 years old when he becomes king. And he's going to be king for 11 years. Now, in his reign, Nebuchadnezzar has become king. Nebuchadnezzar, this midget, has developed the Babylonian Empire. In his first year, he conquers the city of Nineveh. Nineveh is the capital of the Assyrian Empire. So Nebuchadnezzar conquers the Assyrian Empire. He is now the new world empire. Nebuchadnezzar will rule the world. Nebuchadnezzar, when he captures an enemy, he doesn't believe in any Geneva Conventions. Whereas it was common practice in those days that you afforded a certain politeness to the enemy king that was captured. They were given certain benefits. When Nebuchadnezzar would capture a king, he'd torture him. The Navi says that when Nebuchadnezzar died, so in perdition, the souls of the different kings started trembling. They said, "Oh no, he's coming down to capture perdition too." Feared Nebuchadnezzar was. And Nebuchadnezzar, in the second year of his reign, comes to conquer Jerusalem. And he conquers Jerusalem. And he conquers the king, Jehoiakim. And he tells Jehoiakim, "Behave. Pay taxes. Leave me as king. I leave you as governor. You'll be my governor here in Jerusalem." So for 3 years, Jehoiakim pays taxes and he's an obedient governor. And then he rebels. And Hashem sends back the Assyrian Empire. And then Nebuchadnezzar comes and takes him into captivity. He takes over Jerusalem again and appoints his son Jehoiachin as king. And he comes back to Babylon. And his advisors say, when you have a bad dog, don't assume he's going to give birth to a good pup. If the father misbehaved, the son will misbehave. Remove the son from being your governor. So he comes back and tells Jehoiachin, "No way, you're not my king." At that time, Nebuchadnezzar goes into the temple and takes out 10,000 men to exile. He says, "I gave them a chance and they rebelled. So I have to remove all the locksmiths, all the blacksmiths, anyone that could help them set up a program against me." Our sages say that the 10,000 locksmiths and blacksmiths that he took out of Israel were not locksmiths and blacksmiths. It's a code. Really, they were the leaders, they were the rabbis, they were the educators. He wanted to ensure they would not have leadership so they would never rebel. What he in fact did was the greatest favor in Jewish history, possibly, to the Jewish people. Because by taking the leaders, 10,000 rabbis, out to Babylon, they established academies that lasted longer than Oxford, longer than Cambridge, longer than the longest institution of education that's around today. The institutions that they establish in Babylon will last in the range of 1,000 years. So what he's done here, by taking 10,000 rabbis, taking them out to Babylon, and now they are the introductory force in Babylon, so that years later, when the rest of Israel is exiled to Babylon, they're coming to communities that have been established, Orthodox, observant, educational institutions, yeshivas, everything's established. Babylon becomes the center of Torah. When we have to rule in halacha, the Babylonian Talmud gets greater weight than the Jerusalem Talmud, according to most halachic opinions. We know the Rambam doesn't go with that, but most halachic opinions go with the Babylonian Talmud. So Babylon becomes a thriving center of Torah. And unwittingly, Nebuchadnezzar is the one who does this for us.
They just did that to exile.
Right, but you see, Hashem was having a different plan.
Right.
So,
you're saying this is before the exile of the first temple?
Correct. The first temple is still around, but he leaves Jerusalem without its brave warriors, without its leaders. Our sages say warriors of Torah. The ones he took out were the leaders, the soul of the city he took out of it. So he takes Yoyachin's uncle Matanya, and he changes his name to Tzidkiyahu, because one day Matanya walks into the room and Nebuchadnezzar is in the middle of eating a rabbit alive. Now, even Nebuchadnezzar has a little bit of shame. He didn't want this leaking out. So he tells Matanya, promise me you won't rebel against me, and promise me that you will never reveal that you saw me eating a rabbit alive. He doesn't want everyone to know. He's cruel. He has a reputation, but this he didn't want to know. He was embarrassed about this. And so, Tzidkiyahu promises. He's 21 years old. What? Okay. So, Matanya has his name changed to Tzidkiyahu. And the prophet repeatedly warns him, you will be exiled. You will suffer. Give in. When the Babylonians, ultimately Tzidkiyahu rebels, ultimately Tzidkiyahu goes back on his promise, he goes to the rabbis and has his vow repealed, and then he reveals the secret and embarrasses Nebuchadnezzar. And when Nebuchadnezzar hears of this and Tzidkiyahu's rebellion, he comes back and lays siege on the city, and the prophet Jeremiah begs him, you're all going to die. People are dying of hunger. God has decreed the city is destroyed. Give in. And Tzidkiyahu doesn't listen. He incarcerates Yirmiyahu. He says, you're ruining the morale of the soldiers. At one point, he throws him into a pit of tar to die, to sink and die a grueling death. Fortunately for him, his disciple, Eved Melech HaKushi is his nickname, otherwise known as Baruch ben Neriah, the Rebbe of Ezra the scribe, comes and saves the day and saves him out of the pit of tar. But Tzidkiyahu is fighting to the end because Tzidkiyahu has a backup plan. Tzidkiyahu has dug a tunnel through which he can escape into the forest outside Jerusalem. So Tzidkiyahu repeatedly thinks to himself, even if the city gets destroyed, I'll take my family, I'll run out of the tunnel, I have my gold, I have my jewelry, I'll make it, I'll have money, so the city will be destroyed, I'll be okay. And Jeremiah keeps warning him. He says to him, you will come to Babylon, you will be exiled, you won't see Babylon. He says, what's Jeremiah talking about? He says, Jeremiah tells him, I'm warning you. Give up because you will suffer. You're destroying the people. And Tzidkiyahu doesn't listen because he has a backup plan. So when Nebuchadnezzar finally breaks into the city, Tzidkiyahu takes his family and scuttles out of the city in their secret tunnel. And they're going through the tunnel underground, but Hashem has another plan. So Hashem brings a beautiful deer in front of the Babylonian soldiers. And a whole battalion decides, hey, to heck with Jerusalem, let's eat that deer. So they shoot at it, and they miss, and the deer advances a drop. So they advance after the deer, and they shoot again, and they miss again, and the deer advances a drop more, and slowly the deer leads them to the entrance to the tunnel. And Tzidkiyahu walks out in his royal garb with his children and family, and there's the Babylonian battalion trying to catch the deer, and they catch Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu is brought before Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar starts yelling at him and berating him. You promised. How'd you do that? Why did you go back on your promise? Didn't you promise by Hashem's name? Tell me, how could a Jew do that? So he tells him, the rabbis annulled my vow. So Tzidkiyahu is going to let out his wrath at the rabbis. Nebuchadnezzar is going to let out his wrath at the rabbis. He throws Tzidkiyahu to the ground like an animal and slaughters Tzidkiyahu's children one by one before his eyes. So that the last vision Tzidkiyahu sees before Nebuchadnezzar takes out his eyes is his own children slaughtered. That's the last thing he will see in his life. He blinds him and then rapes him. And then he takes him out in shackles to Babylon. And as Tzidkiyahu is walking, so degraded, out into Babylon, Tzidkiyahu says, Jeremiah was right. Jeremiah said, I would be led like a knave into Babylon, but I would not see Babylon, and I never knew what he meant. Here I am, I have no eyes, but I'm in Babylon. That's what Jeremiah warned him. And as we said, Nebuchadnezzar was excruciatingly cruel to the people he captured, so he gave Tzidkiyahu no favors, threw him into a dungeon. Poor Tzidkiyahu would suffer daily at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. And that is the beginning of our exile. So our story begins, we now open the book of Daniel, with that introduction. You remember Yoyakim? You remember Yoyakim, who took the throne for 3 months, his son, and then Nebuchadnezzar says, bad idea, take him off. And then our final king, Matanya, whose name was changed to Tzidkiyahu. We have two rebellions. We have Yoyakim's initial reign, and then his rebellion, and then finally his rebellion is put down. So now let's begin the book of Daniel. Now that we've introduced everything, the book of Daniel is going to introduce us to the book of Esther. Let's begin.